So Malik Nabers, obviously a total stud, but had to leave the game last night with a concussion. He posted something on Instagram. Did you see that?
I did not see it.
He seemed to be okay. We don't have an update yet, Hoff, right? But Daboll is going to speak at, what, 12:30, you said? But you saw Nabers on Instagram this morning. I mean, look, it's he gets hurt. Can you imagine the Giants offense without Malik Nabers?
No, they'd be last year's team.
They would be toast.
We don't want to do that anymore.
Even with him, they can't score touchdowns. Imagine
last year without Saquon, it would be.
Yeah, imagine without him. So you got a hope knock on one. I think he'll be all right. But just the way that, look, Nabers has become that guy. And I was watching closely trying to see Dallas, how they were going to cover him.
Mm-hmm.
And before Diggs got hurt, he was on him. But the way that they were playing him, I didn't think was right. I wouldn't, you can't cover him one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to double this guy every single time. Otherwise, he can be able to beat you. And, I mean, even with the limited big plays from Malik Nabers last night, he still was able to catch, what, 9 passes for 100 yards?
He's setting records. I mean, he's just obliterating the record book. Now, I mean, there was a point where catching 100 balls was like, wow, that was the, you know, that was the top of the mountain. That was the pinnacle. Now, it's fairly consistent. But Malik Nabers is special. And the only thing that I worry about, all right, with the concussion here, is now, well, I'm a half a step back. I think we still too often associate the concussion with that massive hit, like boom, the one visible blow up in the middle of the field where you get decked by a safety, right? It's not always that way. So I don't know, was something a little awry prior to that, and this just made it a little bit worse? I'm not sure, but when he caught the ball and tried to dot his feet by the sidelines there, and then obviously was ultimately concussed, it didn't seem incredibly threatening to me. I thought maybe he hurt his leg or he got kicked in the in the stones or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting there, I'm saying, man, I don't want to be irresponsible, but at all. But if you're that vulnerable and that susceptible to a concussion there in that spot, what does that say about your vulnerability?
You don't think it could have been somewhere before?
Well, it could have been.
He did take some vicious hits.
I understand that. No, that's why I say I think there were a few things that added up before that. But that was not... Now, again, anytime your head hits the turf, that's not a good thing. But I worry about that.
Does it work like that? Like, I don't know. Could he have had a concussion on one of the prior hits and then just not be diagnosed until after the fact, because by that point when he went down, he was just like...
Yeah, again, I want to stay in my lane, but evidently something happened when he tried to make that play on the sideline that obviously necessitated some treatment there, and went inside the tent, and what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's like a hamstring, a grade one, a grade two. You can't really determine when it happened. You know, some guys are really good at hiding it. I don't know. All I know is 4 games in, that's just, you know, it's early.
What's the protocol with that? If he has concussion, a concussion and all that stuff, he could be cleared for week 5, though?
No, yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, he could get cleared. I don't know if he will be, but he could be for sure.
Right.
Got to go through the NFL non-Giants.
But not, even though you have NFL a protocol. Concussion, okay,
yeah.
Right. As long as
he's not definitely out for week 5.
That's scary. Yeah,
it is.
I know what you're saying. If he's, some guys we've seen.
Altoon.
No.
We went through that if you're an old enough Jeff fan.
Tua, Lindros, like some guys are just... I don't think it's all head hits are created equally. I think some guys are susceptible to concussion. I was driving home at that point. I left the game early. And I probably left it like 10 minutes ago in the fourth quarter after I realized the Giants aren't, in fact, going to score a touchdown. There's no way of sitting in that traffic. But I was listening to Bob Papa and Carl Banks talk about it, and Bob made it sound like maybe he rolled on top of the ball and had the wind knocked out of him or something like that.
That's a pretty good guess on Bob's part. I could see that.
Yeah,
but
so I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
you can envision that. He described it well,
uh-huh,
and you can understand it. I was certainly not thinking concussion for Nabers.
Neither was I. It was the last thing I was thinking about. You know, but you have to understand, guys, it's not just the violent shot to the head. Like, you can make a tackle or get hit and your neck snaps back your brain shifts a little bit. Like, there's just... It's the brain.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Greg is in Rahway. What's up, Greg?
Good morning, BT and Sal. How you guys doing, all right?
How are you, Greg?
Yeah, we're good. What's going on, buddy?
Good. No, I mean, everybody's, like, talking about Jones and stuff, but I just wanted to bring it back to a few years ago when he got drafted. He wouldn't have been drafted because Herbert would have been drafted in his place, but Herbert went back to college.
Okay.
So they kind of, like, got stuck. You know, picking Jones.
Well, no, Greg, I think you're letting those guys off the hook. I mean, if you don't love the quarterback, you can't take him at 6 here. You can always pivot trade down.
I mean, Eli's getting old, and I think they wanted Herbert because everybody flew out to check the guy, you know?
But that's called due diligence. I understood, even if you really don't have a chance to draft. Like the Jets interviewed some of these quarterback prospects this year, and, you know, we didn't think they were going to take a quarterback. You just never know. You do your homework, and thanks for the call there, Greg. The circumstances of that draft were very strange. I just remember I was in Nashville. Me and Teak were there doing our show, right? I'll never forget. We finish up. This is the old national show. We finish up, and we get a couple of beers, and we're in a tent, and it was raining. And, like, they had the NFL draft on in front of us, this big public thing. It was awesome, right? And they take Jones. And we're sitting there, you know, shielding ourselves from the rain, our feet up on the table, headsets off. I'm like, what are you guys doing? He's like, you didn't hate it. He's like, I don't know. And we had met Daniel the previous year. He came into our studio. I think he was doing an internship on Wall Street. And two things jumped out about Jones. Number one, he was a lot bigger than I thought. And he was just a terrific young man, which means less. I mean, of course, you want a good person as your quarterback, but right now that doesn't mean much. So that's all I knew about Danny. He played at Duke for a team that was eh. He was big. He was a little faster than I thought because of the stereotypes. And he was a good kid. I didn't think he was going sixth.
I don't remember. Yeah, it felt like an extreme reach, but I do remember Gettleman saying he loved the kid and all that stuff. Gettleman, he loves everybody. We get it. I don't remember at all the Giants and Justin Herbert. I remember Dwayne Haskins being the pick
local,
there.
He was local, Dwayne, rest in peace. Dwayne Haskins, local kid,
and
Jersey.
I remember not wanting Haskins. I didn't think, just on the little that I saw him at Ohio State, I did not love him as a quarterback. So I love the Daniel Jones pick? I didn't really know much about him.
Now, how much Duke football do you watch?
Yeah,
honestly.
And that, it did feel like a reach, but whatever. They liked him. And by the way, like, look at all the top picks. You know me, I'm not a big Daniel Jones supporter here, but look at all the top picks that have been complete busts.
I know.
You could do a lot worse than so far. Some of this is, I mean, he won a playoff game. How many picks that were taken in the top five quarterbacks have even been to the playoffs, let alone won a playoff game?
I got a bunch on my team that haven't been.
John is calling.
We're on my team.
John is calling from Valley Stream. What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, guys? How we doing? Hey. I can't do this anymore. I just can't. I can't. I mean, listen, you can say whatever you want about Jones. I almost don't even care anymore. But to talk about him today, it's almost irresponsible, because that means that we're not talking about the one guy we should be talking about. Joe Shane is a clown. A clown. He showed it to the world on Hard Knocks. Of course he's got 10 guys in the office with him, because he don't know what he's doing. So he's asking for 10 different opinions, and he finds one. It's like, yeah, okay, maybe that sounds pretty good to me. He's like, look at the draft. Sal, you said it. The Giants just aren't very good. And why? It's a dearth of talent. Look at these drafts. They're horrible. I mean, how far back is Thibodeau and Neal set this team? How far back? And that was your first round picks.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that, John, and thank you for the call. I would, my opinion on Shane is still TBD, because I don't think it's fair to properly assess a general manager in 2 years plus 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I would lean toward more what our last caller was saying than believing wholeheartedly in Shane. There was a time where I believed in him. And I do think, like any general manager, we've gone over this with Joe Douglas for many years, there's going to be some good picks, there are going to be some bad picks. But ultimately, we keep coming back to the same conclusion that even in year three with this regime, they just aren't talented enough. And that's a problem.
Yeah, and it's been a problem for the Giants for a long time. They've just been bereft of talent. I mean, they just haven't gone very deep. I mean, you finally have a receiver that can beat people. I mean, it was years. Last time they had that was Odell. It's maddening, because you should never implode with one bad pick. Because if you do, the foundation is just way too fragile. Look at the Niners. I know they lost a game last week. That was odd. I know the Niners aren't really, the Vikings beat them the prior week. So McCaffrey's out. They're all banged up. And Ayuk's contract and situations out there, whatever. Kittle. But they're a model franchise. All right. And they drafted Trey Lance third. And they said, wow, we messed up. We're moving on. And we're still really good this year aside, first couple of games. So it should never just be solely dependent on nailing one pick. If that's the case, you're not a good team.
No, but it's a cumulative thing here, and Joe Shane has now had, he's been here, this is his third season.
Like, understood.
What happened to Jalen Hyatt? What happened to, I'm not going to say Thibodeau's a bust, but has he fulfilled or exceeded expectations?
No, I think now. Evan Neal's a complete scrub. He's a stiff. He's awful.
And those are the easy ones. And by the way, Banks last year, I liked Deontay Banks, but he's now regressed this year.
Yeah, a little bit.
Phillips looks like a player, but I mean, I'd hope you'd be able to find some players.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas was obviously before.
Schmitz was good.
Before.
He's fine.
Okay, so
I mean, I'm just trying to be fair.
Jones was obviously before, so like they ultimately you judge a regime.
I like Wandale. I do like Wandale.
He's all right.
Drop aside. Yeah. He's good. He's good number two.
He's all right. They have a stud tight end.
Or 2B. Yeah. Darren Waller move didn't work out.
That was a disaster.
That was a mess. Bellinger, they picked him off of scrap heap, Bellinger, didn't they? Was he? I think they did.
Look, there are some good, some bad, like we said with everybody. But I mean, I just don't think they have enough right now. They're building this thing extremely slowly.
They are.
All right, you're going to be patient and give them 5-6 years, fine. But ultimately, I want to see them pick the quarterback. And I don't believe it's going to be Daniel Jones.
It's definitely not going to be Jones. Here's what's frustrating. If I'm a Giants fan, I don't know if my emotion, and I said this in the pre-show meeting, I don't think it's visceral today. Like, there's days you come out, whether it's us leading the show or you guys, and some Giant fans are visceral, and I get it. I'm not going to tell you not to be. But I don't think it's a visceral day. Because I think if you attach and attack some pragmatism to where the Giants are, you'll understand that being visceral is probably missing the mark because you're getting angry at something that you shouldn't get angry at. I only get angry like if
they just lost again to the Cowboys.
I hear you. I get that. Oh, I'm not saying to enjoy the loss. Like, to me, I get angry when I mess up something that I know I shouldn't mess up.
Yeah.
Now that like if I shoot a 93 on the golf course, I'm not angry because I'm not going to shoot a whole hell of a lot better than that. Right. My point is this: the thing that would bother me, like, intellectually here, is that my team's not getting better and the Cowboys and the Eagles are getting a little bit worse. And I would feel so much more emboldened as a Giants fan, even if they would have lost last night, but they looked better or they looked different or they had a young quarterback under center.
Yeah.
All right, Dallas coming down a little. Jalen Hurts coming down a little. Philly's not what they once were. And then I could say, and we're incrementally inching forward. But they're not even really inching forward. They're just not that talented.
Right, but part of the reason to be even angrier is because they should have won week two, and they could have easily won last night.
But why didn't they win?
They're not that good. No, because they're shooting themselves in the foot. Yeah, I agree with you. They're not that good. But that's not why they didn't beat Washington. They're shooting themselves in the foot, whether it's mistakes, whether it's missed throws, whether it's the defense not being able to make a damn play and get a punt. They didn't give up a touchdown. They scored three, and they lost that game. Like, that's a game inexcusable to lose. And then last night, same thing. The drops. Like, yeah, they're not good enough. I agree. But that is not the main takeaway from last night or certainly week two. It's not why they're 1-3 now. They should be better record-wise. That what is, to me, frustrating. Like, you can learn while winning. Hey, you know what? We're 2-2, but we got a long way to go. At least you'd be encouraged. Like, all right, 2-2 through the first four, and they're building towards something.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like they're building towards something, and they've gotten better, but they still don't have the results to show. And in these two particular losses, forget week one, because they are just not on the Vikings level. They could have very easily, they should have beaten Washington, and they very easily could have beaten Dallas last night.
Well, and the other thing that needs to be said, I'm going to get into Shane on this a little bit here. You know, they're two best players. I'm going to throw Neighbors up there. They're three best players. Dexter Lawrence, not Joe Shane's guy. Obviously, Andrew Thomas, not Joe Shane's guy. Malik Neighbors, that's his guy, but it's his first year. So it's taken Shane a while to get difference makers, and that could be a problem.
Jared is calling from Randolph. What's up, Jared?
Hey, man.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
I had a thought I had last night about watching that Malik Neighbors drop at the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on this, but it kind of looked like the way his body was moving towards the sideline and almost at the point where he was parallel with the ground, that he kind of like looked like he blacked out. And that's why he did a face plant to the ground. The way he was about to do the toe tap, it looked like his legs kind of released from him, like body went limp. And I was just wondering your thoughts that maybe a little bit more of a concussion.
Yeah,
but.
We've got to be careful with this here, Jared. Thanks for the call, buddy. There are injuries where I'm like, he's fine. And then there's injuries where I'm like, oh, God. And then there's moments like last night where I'm like, all right, why is he not up? I don't even know what happened. It did look a little different. Like, maybe I don't know if this is the perfect word. Like, the limpness as he just kind of laid there was a little disconcerting,
right?
But you know, it did look a little different.
Pete is calling from Seaford. What's up, Pete?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Okay.
You know, not a Giants fan here, but objectively watching this team, you know, the Giants held the ball after the Cowboy touchdown in the first quarter for basically like 15 out of the next 18 minutes of clock time.
Yeah,
and they came away with 6 points.
Yeah.
And I went back and I looked through the scroll of the play-by-play on Bleacher Report just because I wasn't making sure I remembered it correctly. Like, Jones didn't look terrible during that stretch. You know, yes, they can't run the ball, but the play calling in the red zone is so flaccid from this head coach. And he looks like he's coaching scared.
Well, why? Okay, you're right, Pete. That makes sense. Now, why do you think that's the case?
I think because he's afraid of the Jones implosion.
Correct.
I think he's afraid
because
of the pick six in the end zone.
Yeah,
because
he doesn't trust the quarterback.
Well, yeah, but do you think that given this, and BT just touched on it, given this GM's track record through 3 years, and given the fact that I called you guys before and said, I think since the second half of that Eagles playoff game, Daboll has not been the same coach. I think he is coaching very afraid for the last...
Okay. So you say that he coached scared. That's your first premise. That's the first thing you said. All right, that's fine. So does a scared coach go for it on fourth down 5 straight times?
I think that the score and the field position dictated those situations.
Okay.
So,
but, you know,
yes.
But, so every single coach, every coach in the NFL, all 32 of them going 5 for 5. No one's punting.
No, but this was a different situation.
You're down basically 2 points from midfield the whole game.
I understand that.
I think the game just led to that.
I understand. But what I'm saying, though, with a low-scoring game, don't tell me there's not other – now, maybe it's not the right move, but don't tell me there's not other NFL coaches that aren't trying to punt it inside the 10. There are.
I'm sure there are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So then how can you say he's coaching scared?
Well, because he didn't go for it on fourth and three from the fourth and goal from the – that's one. And then the other would be just not throwing the ball down the field a lot. I don't even know if it's coaching scared. I would say it's coaching conservatively because of the quarterback. That, like, newsflash, the reason Daniel Jones changed from where he was prior to Dable's arrival when Dable got here in 2022 was because Brian Dable limited the opportunities for Jones to make mistakes. That's why he had success. That's, again, why people were looking last night and say, well, look at what Daniel Jones is doing. Yeah, that's by design from the head coach and the play calling because he's limiting the opportunities for Jones to make mistakes. And to Jones' credit, he has not made the mistakes, but that's because of the way Dable is drawing things up. Now, I still think Jones has extreme limitations, and Dable understands those. I mean, at some point, they got to score some touchdowns here. I don't think he's coaching scared, but I do think he's coaching conservatively, and I do think that he had a chance to be aggressive on that fourth and goal from the three and chose not to.
I think he's coaching around the lack of talent. You know, one of the things that I said to Sal in the first segment is, you know, you take the perceived 10, 12, 13, 14 best teams in the NFL right now, right? And you line up the Giants' 11 offensive starters. How many of those guys are starting for playoff teams? Well, you got Andrew Thomas, who's a stud. Who else? Neighbors? And that's it.
That's why I like the coach, because I do think he makes the most out of what he's given. Hasn't been given enough. Although last night, I think Dable could have been a little bit more aggressive and maybe it would have changed the result of the game.
I don't know if this is my Jet bias, my Green bias, right? Now, we all complain about MetLife Stadium. We all complain.
Yeah.
We were waiting for it to get built. It opened up. We're like, this is it?
I got to be honest, it's awful.
It is awful. But I got to tell you, when the Jets play a night game, I love it. It pops. It looks vibrant. When the Giants play a night game, it looks the same, and it reminds me how much I dislike it. Is that just because I'm a Jets guy? I think the stadium looks better green.
Well, do you just like the color green better?
Not necessarily. I'm a blue guy. I like
think,
blue.
Because I do think the lighting, like that green light that they use, can pop a little bit more than the blue.
More modern, more, yeah.
I will tell you. Okay, so just for reference point, I've not been anywhere near as many times as you have been, and I haven't been in quite some time, but I did go last Thursday for the Jets and this Thursday for the Giants. So I have a good recent reference point for each. The look was probably nicer with the green, I think. The Giants opening ceremonies were pretty cool. The fireworks were really good. Not that the Jets weren't.
Yeah.
But the crowd was more, I would say it felt more, I don't know if ferocious is the right word. Yesterday was more of a powerful crowd. Even
for the Giants?
Yes. Even with the split with Cowboy fans. And maybe just because of the intensity, because the damn hated Cowboys are taking over your stadium, which, by the way, is pathetic. I don't care what their record is in the last 15 games or whatever it is. There's no way it should be to that extent.
It's always happened, even at the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
Jets, Dolphins, Giants.
And maybe it was a type of game because the game was closer, but I just felt more of a roar.
Really?
I thought the Jet fans were hungry and excited, but there was like a real, maybe it's the anger.
It's funny that you say that, and that's your interpretation. I certainly respect it. You know, you feel what you feel. But I remember Al Michaels, and this is just his interpretation, with the Jets game. He said, I've never heard a stadium sound like this. And I'm like, all right, you're laying on a little thick here, Al. Okay, take it easy.
When was it? Was it pregame?
No, it was, he's like, at the start of this game, I've never felt the stadium. Like, this feels different.
It was great. Jets game. And the Jets chant, like, that separates itself. Sure. I'm not saying it wasn't loud. I just felt a different type energy that felt more intense last night. Again, it could have just been the game. Like, going to the Patriots game, you expected the Jets to squash the Pats, and there weren't that many Patriot fans there.
Yeah.
So it's a different type energy that I felt there last night. I will say the building is just...
Yeah, it is what it is, man.
I've been here for a playoff game years ago. It's bland.
It's very bland.
The food is... I don't even... Like, I look at the food. I don't even buy them.
I don't go to games to eat. I mean, I don't eat.
Me neither.
Did I eat? No. I didn't eat at Tennessee when I went to the Jets Titans game. I'm not leaving my seat unless I have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
I want to watch the game.
Same thing.
People go to these games to get food. I'm watching the game.
Especially football. Although the baseball game, we went to the baseball game.
That's different.
You and Hop leave me for 25 minutes.
We had to get drinks.
Actually, more than
that's different.
Yeah, I don't leave the game.
Drinks.
Yeah. I do not. When I'm at the football games and these are big, I'm not leaving the seat.
No way.
But I was hungry and I'm like.
Yeah, and again, I get it. I'm just talking about the halfway in. You're in all these Giants games. You're a Jets fan, I think. Like the ambiance, like the green, just the way. And maybe it's just on TV. Although I've been to night games for the Jets as well in person. The way the green in the stadium just is illuminated. And maybe green just a better color translates better. Jets games at night just seem more vibrant than Giants. It looks better.
I don't know. Last night did look pretty cool. I was very excited again. I heard that supposedly if there was a touchdown scored, it was going to look really cool after they scored a touchdown.
But just they couldn't get to it.
Yeah. Maybe another 2 weeks.
Keep that in the back pocket.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, are you serious out there? We're going to do something cool?
That's what I heard. Yeah, it was supposed to be. And I honestly thought that the Giants were a little far behind because the Jets had done this since last year. The Rangers did it. Some other teams have been doing this. Mets have been doing this for... they're catching up. I thought it looked really cool.
What are you talking about?
Shut lights off or doing something wacky.
The Giants are more serious, like, you know, buttoned up organization.
A little more conservative.
Yeah,
but the Yankees do stuff like that. Yeah. Yankees have fun.
The Mets is out of control with their light shows.
It's like a club, man.
Bam, bam,
bam, bam. Got the dance team.
Hey, here's a news flash.
Get loose.
If I wanted to go to a club, I would. I want to go to a baseball game. Try to go to a baseball game and a dance club breaks out. At the Garden, they do the same stuff, dude. In between periods.
My God.
Yeah, right. No, it's more of a club. The in-between period DJ at Madison Square Garden, blaring.
I don't need that
blaring.
Stuff.
Blaring.
I don't need it, man.
Good God. Give me the people that could spin the plates on the sticks or something.
Oh,
like,
she's great.
Skate around.
That woman's
where's
awesome.
The baby races?
Yeah, whatever. Give me the little kids running out there with a dog with the frisbee.
$10,000, you make a half-court shot, you heave it in, you win some loot. Enough with the stupid music. Oh, God almighty.
And it's at a
score
high
some
decibel.
Touchdowns, win some games.
Oh, my God, it's pathetic. All right, Michael is calling from Madison, New Jersey. What's up, Michael?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
I want to know, when is the pride, when is everything going to be restored to the Giants? Because these last 9 years have been terrible. I mean, I went through it as a kid after Phil Simms, Lawrence Taylor left with Dave Brown, Kent Graham. We're in this monotony, and it's just got to end because New York is losing the Giants. And when the Giants are on, actually, it's weird. I don't think New York loves any more team more than the Giants. And it's weird because sometimes it overpowers the Yankees. But we're losing fans, and I just...
You're not losing fans.
Losing fans.
Come on.
Losing fans? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, as far as I support it, because I live right across from where the Jets train.
Yep.
And you know, kids in my area, nobody wants to be a Giants fan anymore.
Well, because they live in Florham Park, and then green has shut down their throat.
Thank you.
Are your neighbors Bertiki, by the way?
I don't think they're, I don't think they're losing fans. I will say that, and we've talked about this before, fantasy football, red zone, that has taken, I think, a lot of younger football fans away from just rooting for a team that is regional. They root for whoever superstar they like, whether they like Mahomes or whether their fantasy player, you know, 10 years ago led them to a championship. That's the team that they stick with. Like, I think that's happened. I don't think the Giants are losing fans.
I'm going to say this. I want to make sure I say this the right way. Times have changed, right? So, generally speaking, broad stroke.
Yeah.
Back in the day, meaning our day, and I'm sure you can relate to this, you know, there is no chance my mom would say, hey, would go, let's go apple picking, hon, on a Sunday, or let's go to the mall, or let's go. No, mom knows it's football day, and dad's worked all week, and dad's watching football. That's it. I think what's happened now, and I've seen this, now your daughter's only three, so you're not really out there yet with all the families. You, trust me, you're getting out there, and that's going to be something else that's going to drive you nuts. I can't wait for those stories. Although I love it. I see you hating it, unfortunately for you. A lot of families now, they are less committed to staying on the couch and watching, talking about just the Giants, not just football. Like, families who have been with the Giants forever are bailing. And the dads aren't, you know, certainly, not, I don't want to say putting their foot down. That sounds ridiculous. But, and there's a million, my wife's a great football fan. That's why I say I want to make sure I say this the right way. But I just think the way Sundays are embraced are different. It's not just it is football. It is now, well, if the Giants aren't interesting, we're doing something else. And that trickles down to the kids to the point about maybe you do lose some fans downstream because they're not growing up in the same fervent household like a lot of us did.
There are so many different things to do in today's day and age that why would you subject yourself to sit there to watch a team go 4-13 or whatever it is? And just take the beatings. Now, some people love it. It's been built in their family's history. It's a thing. Come fall, it's football Sunday. You go tailgate. If not, you have people over. You cook the food. I didn't grow up in a house that watched football. My father's not a football fan. He was not a football fan at all. So my grandfather, yes, a little bit, but I don't remember ever growing up watching football. It was just like a thing on my own. I think actually it started from playing Madden football on Genesis. I started liking football and whatever it may be. So I didn't come from the traditional sports fan house where you grow up with a father watching the games on Sunday. But that's certainly what I did. And I will tell you, I don't know if it's because I've gotten older, but it's the same thing. I'm not sitting there anymore watching 4 or 5 games at 1, 4 or 6 games, 4 games at 4, the Sunday night game. I'll watch the Jets and Giants because I have to for work and because I do love football and I'm interested in their stories. And then I'm out. I'm taking my daughter to the... I mean, I'm working every day, so I don't get to see her during the week.
Mm-hmm.
I barely see my wife and daughter as it is. I can't just say I'm going to be here Sunday locked in from 1 till midnight. On occasion, yes.
Yep.
Maybe have some people over, special day, whatever. But if the Giants are playing at 1 of the... Like this Sunday, Jets are playing at 1, Giants are not playing, obviously. I'm watching the Jets, and then that's it. Then I'm free to do whatever I want with the day.
Yeah, I mean, it was different back then. Now, the Sunday night game, for years, it wasn't there, and then... You know, and then as it came, you know, I started getting a little bit older, whatever, high school, and, you know, you just have a different schedule. But no, I mean, it was, you know, running back from church, right, and missing the first and a half a quarter of the first quarter of the Jets or the Giants, whomever was playing first, right, watch that game, and then watch the Jet or the Giant game after it, or the Niners or the Raiders. And then really the only time that me and my dad would leave the basement is when I would go up to maybe steal a meatball or a little mozzarella, honestly. My mom would always give me stuff on the side. That was it. And then it was dinner time, and it was 60 minutes, and it was like, you know, get ready for school, and the uniform is out, and that's it. Like, it was football all day. It's not like that. Now, many of us still love it, but it has changed a lot. And I think that you've lost some fans because you grow up. Generally, you are what you grow up around.
The Mets, obviously, BT, getting set for a huge weekend. I hate the fact that they had no games the last two nights, but here we are getting set. They're in Milwaukee, so a big 3-game series. We'll be watching. We'll be scoreboard watching and all that. And then see what happens Monday if the games mean something. But it hit me after watching the Yankees celebrate last night, celebrating their division, the champagne celebration. And we know we've talked about this with the Mets not having a celebration in 2022, choosing not to celebrate the playoff berth, but waiting for the division, which never happened. Do you realize that there still is a chance this year where the Mets could... Like, what happens if they win Monday, game one and of the doubleheader?
Yep.
Clinch then, and because game two doesn't mean anything, or even if it does mean something, they can't celebrate. Or if after game two, they win game two, they can't celebrate because they got to go to San Diego or back to Milwaukee. Like, the Mets, again, because of this weather... Even if they do get in, which I'm still not sure about, they're not going to celebrate again.
I mean, I got news for you. If I were you, I wouldn't fixate so much on these celebrations, and I would just worry about getting in. I mean, whether or not you get to drink beer or champagne, to me, it doesn't matter. Just get in.
Yeah, but part of the fun is that celebration. And don't you think they're just, to a certain extent, snake bit? Think about it. 2022, they won 101,
I don't think so.
101 games. The only team to get in the postseason in 2022 that didn't have a champagne celebration.
Yep.
And now here we are, and even if they do get in, and they can't wait to have that celebration, because Alonso, to his words, said it himself, we missed out on doing it. Now they might not be able to because of logistics.
Or they can win the first two and business is taken care of, and they can have that little celebration that you guys crave.
How do you think it goes?
I think the Mets are going to be okay this weekend. I do. I think they're going to be a playoff team. I think there's going to be some sweaty moments. You got Manaea going tonight, which you got to love. The rest of the rotation, by the way, in case you aren't sure, is not yet plotted out.
If they lose tonight, they're in big trouble.
Well, if they lose tonight, that might change my opinion here. Brewers are up a ton of games. Who knows what they're really playing for? I don't know. But
nothing. They're locked in, I believe.
Well, they're definitely locked in for the division. So, but and can they get the best record?
No,
they can't. They can't. They're locked.
Dodgers and Phillies should have at least, I think, three games on them.
Dodgers have four. Phillies have three. Brewers are at 91. They're up 10-game division set, so they can't move anywhere. So they will handle this with passing interest, although that's almost sometimes dangerous as well. Because when you have a bunch of pro athletes, whether it's young kids trying to prove themselves, when you're playing loose and playing free, generally you play well. And since the Brewers aren't quote-unquote playing for anything, I don't know, maybe that has an adverse impact on the Mets. I still think the Mets find a way to get in. I think that the fact that they got away from Atlanta and they were able to snuff out, even if it's only temporary, that momentum that was built in that first game where the Mets really did not play a good game. Whether it's the 7-footer in front of the dish, you know, throwing it into right field, the two numbers into right field, the diving catch by Harris, the couple of opposite field home runs. We know what transpired, right? The Mets did not. Mets looked like a bad team there that night. They're not a bad team. So now, if they would have stayed there and had to take the field the next day, say the weather was fine, you know, how much of that residual fear or heaviness, rather, heaviness of the moment would have seeped into maybe Saturday and Sunday, pardon me, Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know. But the fact that they're away from that house of horrors, different team, I think they'll be okay.
How about the fact that the Braves are reserving Chris Sale for a potential elimination game? Mets would have had to face Sale on Wednesday. They don't. Everybody's like, wow, at least they missed him. Now Sale will go Friday. Atlanta saving him potentially for an elimination game on Monday.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Monday.
It's never easy. You know, remember we talked about Mike Scott and the Astros in 86, what he did. And if there was another game, you know, the Mets probably would have lost. Even Keith said we couldn't touch him. Scuffing the ball and that nasty splitter. Remember the Seattle Mariners? They came, Randy Johnson came out of the bullpen in 95 in the wild card. I forget who that was against in the wild card series, and he was unbelievable. So these are the moments that that are going to really punctuate the season. It's been fun, but you got to finish the race.
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
I know that Mets fans are going to take issue with what I'm about to say here, and I really don't care because it's how I feel.
Yeah.
I want the drama on Monday. I want the Mets to have to beat the Braves. Maybe not twice, although I'd love to still see that.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to have to at least beat the Braves in a game on Monday to get in. I want Atlanta. I know the playoffs are nice. I don't want to see them just do it because they beat the Brewers 2 out of 3 and Arizona lost to the Padres 2 out of 3. I want Atlanta. I want the Mets to have to go into Atlanta and beat the Braves. And it's not just because I don't like the Braves or because of what happened in 2022. I think they would benefit from it. I think if you go into Atlanta knowing you have to win a game to get in and you beat them, it kind of exhale a little bit. Okay, we know we had to beat them in a big spot and we did it. And now you feel like we've done anything. We beat Philadelphia 3 out of 4. We've beaten the Dodgers historically or whatever. Yeah. I'm not worried about it. It doesn't mean that they would then again do it in the postseason. But I feel like I want that mental block removed. I want it to come down to Monday, and I want to see the Mets have to win and then go do it in Atlanta.
Good luck with that, buddy.
What do you mean?
I wouldn't want that if I'm you.
Why? Because you're scared?
No. I'd rather just know before Monday that I'm in.
No. I want the Braves.
Okay. Be careful what you ask for.
Don't you think it'd be more telling about
this team? I think it means nothing. I'll tell you why. Even so, if that situation unfolds, now it might be more satisfying and satisfactory to you and Met fans, maybe. I get that part. But no matter how they get in, they're going to have to travel across the country, in all probability, and play a playoff game the next day, and they'll either be ready or they won't. And I don't, beating the Braves, to me, will have no positive or negative residual impact in terms of how hard they play or how well they play in the first wild card game.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that there's a mental thing there. And they can pretend it's not all they want. I saw it. We all saw it with our own eyes the other night in Atlanta. They looked like a completely different team playing the Braves in Atlanta than they looked at almost any point this year, certainly since June.
Yeah.
So I do believe that it exists. Now, could they do what they did in 2000, get to the World Series by bypassing Atlanta, not going through them? Sure. Maybe they don't have to beat Atlanta on Monday. Maybe those games don't mean anything from the Mets' perspective. Maybe the Braves don't get in, or maybe they do, but the Mets never see them, and they can go win a World Series without beating Atlanta. To me, it wouldn't be as satisfying without beating them along the way. I felt the same way in 2000, but to a lesser extent, because I was happy they were there.
Uh-huh.
I want to beat the Braves. I get no satisfaction out of beating Milwaukee. I want to beat the Atlanta Braves.
Do you think you'll win the series in Milwaukee, even though it won't give you much satisfaction in doing so?
It's a great question. We don't know the pitching. Andy Martino did say yesterday.
Mania tonight.
Yeah, Andy did say yesterday that he expects Severino to go Sunday, which I also like.
We want him Monday.
No.
We want him Monday, so we can watch him together for the bet.
I just want him to pitch. I can't. If God forbid they say he's going to pitch Monday, and then those games don't mean anything, they don't play him. I can't lose the bet.
That's true.
I don't want to run that risk. Just let him go out there Sunday.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I don't know. Who's pitching game two of this series? I have no idea what to expect from Milwaukee. My gut says that they're probably going to take two out of three from Milwaukee, and that Arizona's probably going to lose two out of three to San Diego. That's my gut feel.
Which would mean
they'd be in.
Let me just give you the updated postseason odds. Can you guess the Mets here? This factors in everything.
What was it last time?
I forgot, actually. I don't remember what it was last time.
87.
68.2.
That's way low. That's okay. Too low.
All right. What do you think the Braves is?
It's got to be lower than that.
Slightly. I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah.
60?
56.5.
Okay.
Close.
All right.
What do you think the Diamondbacks is right now?
Arizona. Even lower than that. I would say probably 58-ish.
Arizona's 75.3. That is weird.
That doesn't make sense because the Mets have a tiebreaker.
I know, but I'm looking at it right now. 75.3.
So if Arizona wins 2 of 3.
Yep.
And the Mets win 2 of 3.
Yep.
I still believe the Mets would be in, wouldn't they?
If both teams...
No, they wouldn't, because they could still lose both those games to Atlanta. I keep thinking that.
Yeah, if both teams win 2 out of 3, then... Yeah, remember, the Diamondbacks have one more win right now. You understand
That's what I was forgetting. I keep thinking that they're tied. They're virtual tied. They're not an exact tie right now.
Correct.
Right, BT and Sal on the fan. Yeah, be fascinating to watch the scoreboard watch tonight. Although I'd be lying to you, I'm not staying up to watch the Padres. Although maybe I will.
Hey!
Who knows, a little Friday night, I got nothing to do tomorrow.
Dude, if you can't do it this weekend, when are you going to do it?
I say I'll stay up, and then by 10:30, 10 o'clock, I'll be like, falling asleep. All right, and I want to watch that Vince McMahon doc anyway.